Hey guys, welcome to Fitness Mentor's presentation of the National Academy of Sports Medicine's Essentials of Personal Fitness Training. My name's Eddie Lester, here to take you through Chapter 12, or Speed, Agility, and Quickness Training. We are going through the PowerPoint. So, let's go ahead and look at Slide 1. Slide 1 is going to be Chapter 12, Speed, Agility, and Quickness Training. Clicking over to Slide 2, we have some of the objectives. So after this presentation, the participant will be able to describe speed, agility, and quickness training and its purpose. Discuss the importance of speed, agility, and quickness training. Design a speed, agility, and quickness training program for clients in any level of training. Perform, describe, and instruct various speed, agility, and quickness training exercises. So clicking over to slide 3. So with speed, agility, and quickness training, typically most trainers or most people think that it's only going to be beneficial for the athlete or for athletic training, because that is what it typically stems from, is going to be explosive movements, working on lateral movement, forward movement, rotational movement that might be used in a field of athletics or in a specific sport. But in all reality, as a second bullet point points out, you can use it with a typical health club member, and what it's going to be to do is going to be to add intensity and complexity to a workout, increase the cardiorespiratory demand, and provide a simple and exciting variety to a workout routine. So typically what I use speed, agility, and quickness training for is I'm going to use it in a circuit in association with maybe some strength training exercises to keep the client's heart rate up. Some go-to ones that are very easy for clients to do are something like lateral shuffles, forward-resisted sprints, like I'm holding a band around their waist and they're running. Maybe some cone drills or hurdle drills in which they're stepping over hurdles or jumping over hurdles or going straight forward to cones, different things like that. Or even the agility ladder can be really great to keep their heart rate up. So looking at the last bullet point on slide 3, it's going to allow clients to enhance his or her ability to accelerate, decelerate, and dynamically stabilize the entire body during higher velocity movements in multiple planes. So clicking over to slide 4, we're first going to go over speed. So, speed, the definition according to NASM, is the ability to move the body in one intended direction as fast as possible. So that is going to be the product of stride rate and stride length. So to specifically go over those, stride rate is going to be the number of steps in a given amount of time or given distance, and then stride length is going to be the distance covered in one stride. So when you multiply the length covered per stride and the amount of strides per minute or amount of strides in one amount of distance, that's going to give you a total forward movement or forward progress called speed. And I do want you to know that the ability to move the body in one direction as fast as possible is speed. The example that I always give with stride rate and stride length is going to be Usain Bolt. So the typical sprinter in the Olympics is going to be around 5'10", maybe 6 feet tall. Well, what happened is Usain Bolt is 6 foot 6 inches long. It takes him about 47 steps to complete the 100 meter dash. It takes everyone else about 51 steps to complete the 100 meter dash. His stride rate is going to be the same as those other guys like Tyson Gay and the other really fast Jamaican guy, but his stride length is going to cover a little bit more distance per stride. And what that's going to mean is that he's going to be moving at a faster pace because he's getting further per step at the same stride rate. So clicking over to slide 5, with proper sprint mechanics, it's going to be important with running in one direction as fast as possible that you have perfect sprint mechanics. So what does that look like? Looking at the second bullet point, frontside mechanics and backside mechanics is what we're going to emphasize. So moving back to the first bullet point, allow the client to maximize forces generated by muscles so that a maximum velocity can be achieved in the shortest possible time. So I first want you to understand frontside mechanics. So frontside mechanics is going to be the what we call triple flexion, or what NASM will call triple flexion. And that's going to be ankle dorsiflexion, or the ankle going upwards, knee flexion, which is bending of the knee, and then hip flexion. It's kind of like that front foot in a forward step during running. And also a neutral lumbar spine, which is just the spine being in a neutral position. So clicking over to slide 6, we have proper sprint mechanics, but we have backside mechanics. So backside mechanics is going to be the emphasis on triple extension, which is going to be ankle plantar flexion or pointing the toe, knee extension, and then hip extension, and then obviously a neutral lumbar spine as well. So it's going to be the back leg during your sprint, more or less. All right, clicking over to slide 7, next we want to talk about agility. So agility is going to be the ability to start, stop, or change direction quickly while maintaining proper posture. So maintaining proper posture is going to be the key element there, because you can start, you can stop, you can change direction, but if you're all over the place, that's not really going to be efficient agility. So it requires high levels of neuromuscular efficiency, which is constantly regaining a center of gravity over a base of support while changing directions at various speeds. So I like to think of agility as like a NFL running back. He's going to be going in one direction, which is speed, but then he's going to encounter an opponent in which he needs to get around. He's going to have to cut right or cut left or backstep or high step to try to get around this person. And as long as he's maintaining a great center of gravity or over a base of support while he changes direction, that is going to be agility. So agility can also help prevent injury because it focuses on deceleration in the sense that you're running forward really fast and then you have to decelerate to change directions. This enhances the body's ability to effectively control eccentric forces in all planes of motion, or that deceleration. So looking at the second to last bullet point, it improves the structural integrity of the connective tissue. And one specific thing to point out that might be important for the test, which is an example of an agility exercise that might come up on the test, would be called a one-in. And we will go over this in the audiobook lecture, and I will specifically point it out. But a one-in or one-ins is going to be where you just put one foot in the agility ladder or speed ladder as you go through it. Kind of like a hopscotch, but one foot after the other, like you're running forward. So moving over to slide 8, the next one we have is going to be quickness. So this is the last one. So we have speed, agility, and now we have quickness. The main thing that I want you guys to understand about quickness is it's the ability to react. And when I say react, I mean you have something in your environment that you need to adjust to. And the ability with how fast you adjust or react to that is quickness. So to specifically read it, the ability to react and change body position with a maximum rate of force production in all planes of motion and from all body positions during functional activities. So the way that you're going to differentiate quickness from speed and agility is that ability to react. That's the most important thing right there. So looking at the second bullet point on slide number 8, the ability to react to visual, auditory, and kinesthetic feedback during functional activities with minimal hesitation. One thing that might be an example of quickness is in the beginning of the 100-yard dash, you have to listen for the gun to sound. The ability to react to that gun and begin your sprint is going to be quickness. So looking over to slide 9, we have kinetic chain checkpoints. So when we're running in one direction, or in general, when we're moving, changing directions, we want to make sure that we all always have proper kinetic chain alignment. So the foot and ankle complex. You want the foot and ankle complex to be pointed straight ahead, dorsiflexed when it hits the ground, and that's going to be something important to know for the test, that the foot is dorsiflexed when it hits the ground. We have we want to avoid excessive flattening or external rotation, as this will create abnormal stress throughout the rest of the kinetic chain and decrease overall performance. So the knee complex, once again, we want it to remain straight ahead. If the knee's caving in or rotating, that's going to decrease force production and increase the risk for injury. So clicking over to slide 10, the lumbopelvic hip complex. The main thing that you should know is that the body should have a slight lean during acceleration. So the hips and the lumbar spine are going to be pointed, angled slightly downward or a slight forward lean during acceleration. And then during maximal velocity, your hips are going to come more into the upright vertical position or in a neutral position. So the head position is also going to be very important. The head should remain in line with the lumbopelvic hip complex or the spine, so, and should be pointed straight ahead. You should not compensate and move into extensions or like duck your chin or tuck your chin during running. You want it to be neutral the entire time. So this can affect the position of the lumbopelvic hip complex if you move your head in any which direction. So clicking over to slide 11, SAQ training is going to be the best type of training for youth. Why? Because it mimics play. So to read the bullet points, SAQ training for youth is an effective way of providing a variety of exposures to various physiologic, neuromuscular, and biomechanical demands, resulting in further development of physical ability. So SAQ programs for youth have been found to decrease the likelihood of athletic injury, increase the likelihood of exercise participation later in life, and improve physical fitness. So what type of training are you going to do for, pre-adolescent children or for youth? Speed, agility, and quickness is the most relevant to the progression of a youth training program. And that is going to be very important to know for the test, that what type of training should be emphasized in youth: speed, agility, and quickness. All right, clicking over to slide 12, SAQ can also be used for weight loss. And this is what I was telling you earlier, including SAQ in a circuit can be a great way to keep a client's heart rate elevated, therefore burning more calories and making the intensity of the workout harder. So to read the bullet points, high intensity, short duration programs have been found to match or surpass results for functional capacity, muscular power, fat and weight loss, and other metabolic adaptations when compared to moderate intensity, long duration exercise protocols. So this can be a great way to mix up the cardio for your clients. You know, you aren't, as a personal trainer, you aren't going to tell your clients, hey, let's go walk on the treadmill for 5 minutes or 20 minutes or 30 minutes. No, you're going to use your session wisely and you're going to get the person into a higher intensity workout as long as they're ready for it. And you could use speed, agility, and quickness training to assist in that higher intensity. So the second bullet point on slide number 12, the high-intensity short bouts of SAQ drills make them a valid choice for interval training modalities with appropriate non-athletic positions. And remember, we could even do this with seniors in the sense that standing up out of a chair, climbing over or stepping over a block, and then returning to that chair can be an example of a speed, agility, and quickness drill. It's just a little bit easier because it is the senior population and you don't want to go too hard. So clicking over to slide 13, SAQ for seniors, what did I just talk about? So a primary function of SAQ training in seniors is to prevent age-related decreases in bone density, coordinative ability, which is very important, and muscular power. This aids the prevention of injury and increases the potential quality of life. And SAQ-based programs have been found to increase coordinative ability and movement confidence, eliciting a decreased likelihood of falling or other movement-related injury. So SAQ for seniors is obviously going to be a lot more regressed, but it can be a great way to make sure that grandma and grandpa are coordinated as they age so that they reduce the likelihood of falling. All right, so looking over at slide 14, you're going to come into contact with a little bit of program design for speed, agility, and quickness. Really, this just kind of depends on the type of person and the ability level of the client. But you can notice stabilization, strength, and power all have different sets, reps, and rest periods associated with each. So you can use, you know, stabilization 4 to 6 drills for beginning clients or upwards of 6 to 10 drills with a power client or an advanced client. So clicking over to slide 15, to summarize SAQ training, it can be used by athletic and non-athletic populations alike and does not need to be reserved only for athletes. So precise technique and kinetic chain control are required to minimize risk of injury. And programming guidelines must be gauged on the total volume of training for all components in a workout. Awesome, guys. So go ahead and complete the audiobook lecture as well as the assignment and quiz for this chapter. And I look forward to seeing you next time.